Welcome to Not Work, Myth, and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination. I'm your host and lead storyteller, Marisa Gowdy. I'm a myth worker, a story healer, and a writing coach. I'm the author of The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, and the founder of the Writer's Knot and Author's Knot communities. On Knot Work, we explore the mythology and folklore of Ireland and beyond. Whether you're drawn to Celtic culture and the power of the landscape, or whether you just like a good story and expansive conversation, you're in the right place. Fáilte. If you love what you hear and want to support the show, I'd be so grateful if you'd become a paid subscriber to my Myth is Medicine newsletter over on Substack. Look for the link at the top of the show notes or visit mythismedicine.substack.com. Before we explore this week's story, I have a question for you. What about your stories? Whether it's a book project that wants to be birthed, deep, authentic writing to support your business, or a personal creative project you can't quite name yet, I'm here to support you through the entire writing process, from the initial ideation stage to the crafting of narrative and beyond. If you're ready to write memoir or a chronicle of the spiritual journey or a book that explores healing, nature, and the power of imagination, as well as the toughest truths of today, call on me. I walk beside you as you uncover the story that only you can tell. I'm a confidant who supports you through the challenges, and I'm your champion who will offer the nudges you need to get the words on the page. And yes, we hold space for the mythical and the magical all along the way. Visit my website, marisagowdy.com, to learn more about my writing coaching services and set up a free 30-minute consultation. Season 6, Episode 18, Gemini Mythologies. As Blind Boy says, if you're not familiar with the lore of this podcast, I invite you to go back to an earlier episode of the show to get a feel for how it's done around here. Because this time, it seems that I am cooking up a more personal sort of story. I didn't expect to, but it must be something about June being my birthday month and the fact that we passed the 100th episode of Knot Work with little fanfare not so long ago. So after a blessed 3.5 years of the show, we find ourselves somewhere around episode 105. I admit I keep losing count. And I find myself very nearly 46 years old. So last year, around my birthday, I heard my mother's voice, clear as a cardinal's call, telling me I was halfway there. Now, I was out hiking, but I had a strong sense that she didn't mean the length of the trail. She was telling me that I would have 45 more years of this beautiful, difficult, beautiful life. I'd have 30 more years than she did. But we'll get to that. First, let's talk Gemini season. Now, Geminis, we are known for our loquaciousness, for our quick minds, for our penchant for flitting from one topic to another. But from my own Gemini perspective, I see it more as an airy adaptability. Sometimes it's exhausting to constantly find myself standing out in the wind. And sometimes I do wish it was easier to find the ground beneath my feet. But then that's why I married an engineer who I often refer to as my own Carpathian mountain. He's the rock in my stream. The winds and the waves of my Celtic soul can thrive when I have that sort of stability to rely upon. And then there's that Gemini superpower and the super struggle that comes with it, seeing just about everything from both sides, and often seeing it from 3 or 4 sides. It can make that other mental superpower, discernment, into a nearly impossible task sometimes. So many options, so little time. Couldn't I do it all? But then, in true Gemini fashion, there's the ability to keep asking questions, to go at the issue from another angle, to gather more information, to say this and that, and maybe this too. Because luckily, there are many other constellations in the sky, and we're made up of all of them, and we're made up of all the planets. And even if astrology may just be an elaborate meaning-making system that's all up for constant interpretation anyway, I just find again and again that you can't make this shit up. And it really does help explain and frame so very much. Because I literally dreamed of Chani Nicholas the other night. Maybe you've heard of her. Maybe you love the Chani app too. She tends to be the go-to astrology resource for the star-signed inclined members of my circle. Many a conversation begins, well, when I was listening to the Chani podcast. But in my dream, I'm walking down a university concourse, pretending to know where I'm going. And though I consider myself a perennial student, I've been out of formal education for a long time. I don't think I could ever really fit myself into that system again. It's more than hard enough to help my kids navigate it all. So much magic and so much value and so much bullshit and so much limitation. But anyway, I'm going to tell you about my dream. So a woman, she's tall and thin, willowy, she approaches me and she claims to know me from a recent 900 level course we'd taken together. She keeps referring to the class by its number, not its name, which is strange and infuriating. But I try to play along, but she sees right through me. And at last, I come up with something clever to say to my mysterious dream classmate, which of course is very important to me as a Gemini. And that's when I realize that Chani is there too, walking right beside us. So I said this immensely clever thing, and then I called out to Chani and repeated this witty comment once again. And I suggest to her that she put it in her podcast this week. She smiles and says, okay, Sag, I affirm that I am in fact a Sagittarius rising. We part ways when I finally find my way to the final classroom on the corridor, which is, of all things, of course, a pottery class. I think I'm getting a reminder to put my hands back into the earth. Of course, my Carpathian mountain is there all along. And as for that clever thing that I said, that thing that absolutely needed to be repeated, I have not got a clue what it was. But then that aligns so perfectly with the one thing I know for sure right now. The unknown is a palatable, inescapable force. That which is unknown and uncertain is more generative than all the certainties of life we could ever imagine. I want to spend my time with people who humbly and boldly claim they just don't know. I was talking with my longtime teacher, Eleonora Mendelara, the other day. She founded the Sacred Center School for the Healing Arts, and she's been walking in the mystery and grounding that mystery into everyday life for a long, long time. And her message comes down to this. I don't have the solution for you. I have a creative process that can help you become your most authentic self. And that's the kind of authentic self that breaks the mold of modern narcissistic wellness and reaches into the depths of individual identity and extends into a greater reality that holds us all. At least, that's what I've been taught. So dreams and astrology and mystery schools, my husband, the mountain, and my kids' feelings about simply being done with public school. Yeah, I guess now you know a little bit more about me than when we started a few minutes ago. But here we are in knot work, myth, and storytelling, and I have not even mentioned mythology or even really told you a story yet, unless you want to talk about dream work in that way. But I have a sense you'll forgive me. You were warned, after all, or departing from the typical lore of this podcast. So we modern human beings, we're woven of so many different lineages and cultural ancestries. We who have descended from colonizers and settlers, who may have a sense of belonging in multiple places and nowhere all at the same time, and all of us who are a kaleidoscope of the information, the knowledge, the wisdom that come at us every day, not to mention all that dastardly advertising and the misinformation and the brain rot that barrages us constantly. We can end up in a tangle of earnest study or accidental appropriation, and a whole lot of 2 miles wide and 2 inches deep thinking when we dance between all these different sources of wisdom and knowing. But then there's the way that it really is a dance. And we're meant to dance and move and duck and sway. We need the earthly interrogation of motive and source. And we also need the airy dance of Gemini season. So let's get back to the zodiac, which of course references constellations, And of course, each of these constellations has its own set of mythologies. The sign of Gemini offers us the brothers, Castor and Pollux, and they're twins in just about every way. Leda was mother to both, but Castor's father was her husband, King Tyndareus, while Pollux was the son to Zeus, who, depending on the poetic turn of phrase, either raped or seduced Leda. As with any myth that is filtered across time and culture, from oral sources to multiple written texts, the details vary. But the consensus seems to give us the image of a mortal Castor and an immortal Pollux. Now, these devoted brothers were part of all the ancient action. They hung out with Jason on that quest for the Golden Fleece, and they saved their sister Helen after she was abducted by Theseus before the events of the Trojan War. But their real story? The events that set them up in the stars? Well, that story involved cows. Now, if you're like me, and you are a frequent podcast listener, and your mythic persuasion skews toward the Irish, then you'll start to feel right at home. So many stories come back to the importance of the herd or the importance of a single sacred cow or two. Now, in this case, the brothers went to visit a couple of cattle ranchers, Idas and Lynceus. Now, it must have been what we'd call a Wild West sort of scene, all full of blazing tempers and men who were quick on the draw. The story has it that Idas was somehow upset about his oxen. Maybe they'd been mistreated in some way. Or maybe he was angry that they'd failed to yield the milk or the meat he expected and thought he deserved. Certainly the why of his anger would matter if you were really going to explore the story more fully. What we do know is that in his anger and upset and rage, he killed one of the Gemini brothers, Castor. These twins alike in everything that mattered, except that mortal, immortal divide. Before the grieving, the retribution. Pollux stabbed Lynceus. And then, here comes Dad. Zeus took Idas down with a thunderbolt. But after the blood had been spilt, and presumably there was no one left upon the scene but a circle of sad-eyed cows, a god who'd barely broken a sweat after smiting a mortal, and a wretched, immortal brother who'd lost half his soul in a stupid skirmish, well, that's when the prayers started to flow. Pollux prayed to die. Now Zeus, ever capricious, ever the enigma, threw his power toward mercy. He took pity upon the grieving Pollux and offered the sort of compromise that many a modern parent would appreciate, though you're probably like me and you tend to have to negotiate things like who's going to sit where on a long road trip or who has access to the bathroom at what time on school mornings. But no, in this case, it was rather a more profound sort of compromise that Zeus had to strike. It was this: half the time beneath the earth and half the time within the golden homes of heaven. And so, the brothers split their time between Hades and Olympus, together. There's a later writer, Lucius, who has it that Zeus was, in fact, a duplicitous old bastard, and he honored Pollux's prayer to share the immortality between the brothers. But that meant that one would hang out in heaven while the other was bound on earth. They could switch places, but never cross paths. I shudder at that ultimate punishment of eternal separation, so close and yet so far. But that's only because I know it in my own mortal bones. Because even in the second version, they'd always have the stars. Not far from Orion and the dog stars Canis Minor and Canis Major, the brothers would stand together. But still, I still feel chills in my own twin soul. Because I have my own mythic sort of story of Gemini, you see. I mentioned my mother at the beginning, and the way that I heard her prophecy that I was going to live 90 years when she was only given 60. That would be a profound message for any child to receive from a parent who's died. But there's an extra Gemini echo for me. I was born on my mother's birthday, on the 17th of June. She was 29. In a way, twins run in our family. My mother's mother, my Nana, she was an identical twin. That said, of the nearly 20 children my grandmother and my great aunt had between them, and in the countless grandchildren that have come after, and great grandchildren too, To my knowledge, there hasn't been another set of twins since. Now, my mom's been gone for 15 years now. She was my best friend. And oh my goodness, she was fun at a party. You wanted her on the dance floor at your wedding. But she had that magic potion that also enabled her to be the mom in all the ways that a daughter needs. So maybe Lucius, the one who wrote about the brother's eternal separation, maybe he wasn't playing a cruel trick. Maybe he knew something of loss, and he couldn't bear to tell a story that healed grief with one divine act. Our prayers that the dead won't ever leave us, those prayers can be answered in the affirmative, but not with a simple act of restoration and reunion in the flesh. Well, wait. This is supposed to be a story about the stars, right? One more bit about that. My parents named me Marisa because it meant Star of the Sea, from Maris Stella, one of the many monikers of the BVM. And if you don't happen to speak mid-20th century Roman Catholic, BVM is the Blessed Virgin Mother. This was a fine name for a Cape Cod girl, especially one who was taught by both my mother and my grandmother that saying a Hail Mary always helps. And I think you get even more credit if you say it down at the beach. But as I close out this story, there's one more layer of bittersweetness that I need to share. One more story about Castor and Pollux. Because legends have it that when sailors saw the twin stars of Gemini, they knew their journey would be prosperous. But seeing only one foretold bad luck. This long life of mine, any long life that any of us get to live, it's much more than one single sea voyage, of course. And I wouldn't begin to believe that I've lived under a dark star for the last 15 years, even if there are days when, as a mother trying to figure out all these transitions from kid to tween and the great weight that is being 15, trying to mother these girls of mine without backup, without a wise set of arms who feels in her bones that these girls are hers too, there are days when it all does feel too much to bear. And yet, I can look to the stars because there are many clear nights when both stars are visible there in the northern sky. I'm going to close with a brief passage from Stephen Jenkinson's book, Die Wise. Seeing the end of something precious to you gives you the chance of loving it well. Loving and grieving are joined at the hip for all the beauty, soul, and travail that brings. Grief is a way of loving that has slipped from view. Love is a way of grieving that which has not yet done so. We would do well to say this aloud for many days to help get it learned. Grief is a way of loving. Love is a way of grieving. They need each other in order to be themselves. That seems like the ideal message here in Gemini season. This realm of complementary opposites, the dance of the twins, moving back and forth between polarities, dualities that in fact are always joined together as one. Thanks for journeying with me in this personal sort of story today. If you are a Gemini, I wish you the happiest of happy birthdays. And just a note, as we get close to the end of season 6, this summer, you can expect some repeat episodes from the best of the archives, as well as some journeys across mythic landscapes that I have been exploring with my Writer's Knot community over the past many months, and that I will continue to explore in programs coming later this fall. I believe there's truly something to the way that we look to the imaginal realm and to the ground beneath our feet and the environs that surround us. It informs the way we access our voice, the way we modulate it to be heard in a crowd, the way we learn how to whisper so that the more than human world might be able to understand us. A big part of my work over the next months is going to be to explore spaces like the cliff and the cave and the castle and the cottage and the cove and even the chapel. different ways that we can enter in and court the imagination and learn our own voice and how it wants to be raised and lowered, how it wants to be played with, how it wants to be understood and fully embodied. So stay tuned, both here on Not Work Myth and Storytelling and over on Substack, where I write the Myth is Medicine newsletter. And one last note, coming up on June 25th, I'm having a special event for Substack subscribers, those who are part of the community at the monthly or yearly paid level, are invited to join me for a retreat that I'm calling Explore Your Inner Mythic Landscapes. It's a taste of this work we do with the castle, the cliff, the cottage, the cave, and other sacred spaces, both within you and, of course, cast across our great and glorious world. Go find more at mythismedicine.substack.com or just check out the show notes. I'd love to have you with us on June 25th from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Thank you so much for being with me. I wish you blessings in this Gemini season, and may all of the ways in which your soul has been twinned to a sacred other, may that be nourishing for you. And even if that person is gone from your life, may you continue to court and dance with them in that endless weaving of love and grief, of separation and return. Thank you for tuning in to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform, and do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. By the way, everyone is a lover of mythology and story, even if they've forgotten. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, Myth is Medicine, over on Substack, where you'll find new writing and conversations each week. You can find out more about my writing, my book, our online writing communities, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach at marisagowdy.com. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Munsee Lenape tribe, whose name means original people. Music on this show is performed by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy.